This is a replay of the Thursday night, June 22nd WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, unless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I got 3 hours to spend together. Spend it with me, please. Better than that, call 888-876-5593. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. I got plenty to grouse about, God knows. But sadly, our wonderment about what happened to the Titan is now satisfied, sadly, with the fact that we know it imploded. Imploded, I tell you. Well, the good news is the five on board never knew a thing. But geez, Louise. So we'll maybe talk about that. But while we're on the subject of disasters, before we do anything else, Eduardo says, yeah, what about those crickets? Oh, man. Well, just be glad you don't live in Elko. All right, Eduardo, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, I never heard of this town, Elko.
Oh, yeah, well, in Nevada. Yeah, it's on I-80. What I always liked about it, it was the first Cajun Joe's location, which was like the absolute best fast food chicken ever. It was something that Subway, the people at Subway, put together, and it died an unseemly death with lawsuits and all that. But I'll tell you, the first time I tasted that chicken, man, Elko was on my list of faves from then on out.
What highway is that near?
80, I-80.
80?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You go right through it. Absolutely through the heart of Elko, the Dwight D. Eisenhower Freeway there.
Oh, well, even the Germans are going to, because they came on their little German-English news, Deutsche Welle.
Yeah. Well, there's mining there. That's what puts it on the map.
Oh, okay. So they said there's like a rainy spring in this. Well, yeah, they couldn't nests until like the summertime is what they were saying.
Yeah, we should mention these are the Mormon crickets, and by the way, the reason they're called the Mormon crickets was way back when they ate the Mormon crops of the settlers,
right?
And it was looking really bad until the seagulls came and cleared out the crickets, and that's why the seagull is like the state bird of Utah, which, you know, makes no sense other than the Great Salt Lake and the fact they ate the crickets. So yes, that's the deal on that. And this happens, you know, regularly. Now, when I say regularly, I will say not like every 3 years, but at least every 30. So pretty much everybody who lived a lifetime in Elko or anywhere in the Intermountain West has experienced this to one degree or another. It looks like a biblical plague, but it's pretty much mm-hmm. cyclical.
Yeah. Well, one guy was driving, he says he almost went into a ditch.
Some did.
They're slippery.
Yep, some did. Right, because you run over them. And when you run over them, yeah, they squish. And I'm trying to say this in a nice way, but the bottom line is it gets very slick. Even walking, they stick to the bottom of your shoes, and it's worse when they're dead, because usually at that point there's going to be some slickness. So everybody's trying it, and you probably saw some of the pictures that they have, like the hospitals are you know, hiring extra workers to sweep the crickets from the openings and the doors of the hospitals and stuff like
that. Yeah, this one band that was using the bathroom to sweep them up.
Yeah, they use just about everything. But the bottom line is time will fix it, because crickets are interesting. Once the male mates, it dies. And then once the female lays the eggs, it dies. But what I don't know is, we know about the noise because when the crickets travel like across the highway, it just sounds like it's a rainstorm. But crickets are notoriously loud when it hits a certain temperature. Nothing louder than a cricket. And so I just wonder, how does this get when they hit the magic sweet spot, which I assume at some point they do?
Okay.
So that I think would be the most annoying part as far as that goes. The other thing, of course, is that when they die, it's a stench. There's no other word for it. It's people say it's akin to burning flesh. I don't know. But the bottom line is that people are not happy with the aroma.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Yeah.
That was always the deal. And, of course, they're hardy little things. Barriers don't bother them at all. And, you know, like I say, when you run over them, they create something akin to an oil slick, which is why some people have wound up in the ditch. It is.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's something.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful. Yeah.
In a way, it's like black ice. But yeah, when you first see it, you think it's just waves of water. Of blood, you know, because it's that color of red blood on the highway. And you think, oh, my God. But the reality is that as soon as that wave of red starts to move, they're living and they're crickets. And people do run over them. Obviously, there's no choice. But that makes them deadly with how slick it gets.
Okay.
They have grasshoppers, too, by the way, but right now that's not the season. So, yeah, the poor Elko is always trying to eradicate something.
All right, well, I-80, there you go. There's my my route when I go west.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're right into San Francisco, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Now, don't go in winter, because I-80 goes through Reno, and then from Reno, by the time you get to California, that pass, Donner Pass, that's where the family ate each other because they had ultimately no choice because no one came and saved them. There's probably more snow there in Donner Pass than anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
So maybe something like between May and September, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine. And plus, the good
there
news
go,
is
yeah.
you can you know it's not unexpected. You'll know if there's snow in the forecast. But are you planning the drive?
No. I was just curious, just for like a future route. That would be interesting.
You know, from Tampa, it makes it even farther. Of course, you know, from Chicago, it's fairly direct. From Tampa, you got a lot more driving to do. It can be done, and you can do it on interstate without ever leaving the interstate.
Yeah.
Whether you want to or not.
Oh, another thing before I get off. So you see all the merchandise being all locked up. So this guy in Queens took it upon himself to use a blowtorch instead of asking for the clerk for the key.
Okay. And?
To get the merchandise out, yeah. He used a blowtorch.
Really? So he wasn't buying the blowtorch. He was using this to, that's great. That's
to get the
great.
Merchandise, right, yeah.
So
on Daily Mail.
He walks into the Walgreens with a blowtorch.
Right, in Queens, New York, yep.
You kind of notice that, I would think. Yeah, I'm just looking this article up. Yeah, in Astoria, yeah, you'd notice this. And apparently, this was a robbery. You're right. The staff had to watch on in complete and utter confusion. Yeah, oh my good God. So apparently he made away with numerous items. But I wonder how many other he burned up. You know, it is a blowtorch.
I hope it doesn't set a precedent.
Well, not that many people have easy access to a blowtorch and know how to use it. You know, you rarely hear, I've got a blowtorch and I know how to use it.
Right.
So I think we're we're probably safe from that. Now, it's interesting because the Throgs Neck Bridge, which isn't all that far, actually, from the Walgreens in question, but it was shut down by a blowtorch last week. It caught on fire. And I believe that was a planned construction, obviously not a planned fire, but I guess a construction worker's blowtorch set the bridge on fire. So I don't know. Maybe that caused one of the thieves to say, hey, you know, this would work in a Walgreens.
And then, I mean, we are in summer and it's pretty, you know, pretty warm. Does that even cause that?
No.
No? Okay.
No. No.
Okay.
This is happening by intent, not accident. And not,
okay.
Yeah. So interesting. Well, very good. See, you got no problems in Florida where you got no major crickets. Of course, you have palmetto bugs. They're harmless, but you'll see them, and they'll originally be notable by
their
size.
Yeah, I looked up the year, because remember you were asking me about the year?
Yeah.
And it says 1954.
Okay. So that's pretty good. That house is doing well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So anything?
Hillsborough County. Yep.
Yep. Absolutely, Hillsborough County. You're right in the heart of it, and you know you're not far from Ybor City, as we talked, and of course Dale Mabry and all that. So it's easy to get around.
Oh yeah, yeah. Good. So far, so good. So
excellent.
Hopefully, things get continue to be good. So
yeah. Yeah, well, we're glad you're still listening, even if you can't be here.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan, yeah. I'll keep listening, yeah. All right,
okay,
I'm going to jump
thanks.
Off so
appreciate
everybody
it.
Else can get a chance.
Thanks.
Because it's your last day before the weekend.
Yes, indeed. All right.
Okay,
so,
have a good show.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
876-5593. We got Marianne in Chicago. We got Bruce in Elwood. Yeah, we'll talk about the Titan and whatever else you would like to bring up on WGN Radio.
I was thumbing from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When a stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. He said, it's a long walk to Nashville. Would you like to ride, son? When I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio, and them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when he asked me for a light, and I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? He said, boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? 'Cause if you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride. Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That, of course,
off,
David Allen Coe, 1983. Billy Sherrill produced that on Columbia,
as
The Ride. And it was Johnny D who requested we play that. So, yeah, Peck's bad boy, David Allen Coe. Not quite as bad as he made himself out to be, that's for sure. But some good stuff along the way. All right, Marianne in Chicago, what's up?
Hey, Raleigh, how you doing?
I can't complain. How about yourself?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to Johnny B for requesting that song.
Oh,
I haven't
right.
heard it in forever.
Yeah, The Ride.
Second of all, I had my second hip replacement on Monday.
Really? And so how are you doing?
Good. I came home. I was home the same day by 3 in the afternoon.
Whoa. Oh, man.
I'm mobile, and every day it hurts a little less.
Good. Now, you're doing, obviously, outpatient physical therapy.
Well, they're doing in-home now, and then it'll be outpatient after that.
Okay. Where are you going to go?
I don't know yet, because the place I went to for my last trip was like a mile from my house, and they're not there.
Oh.
So what I'm going to do is reach out to Illinois Bone and Joint, who did the surgery, see if they have another facility close to me.
Uh-huh.
And if not, there's an Athletico a half a mile from me.
Well, it's probably not close to you, but you got the finest in the world at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab.
Yeah, that too.
Oh man, that's where I'd be headed.
So I'll call, you know, tomorrow and talk to them and see where they suggest it's close for me to go.
Yeah.
I saw an interesting documentary. Did you know a female radio hostess in Houston, Texas, named, I'm probably going to kill the name, Tumba Sasse?
No.
I remember her first name kind of rhymed with Zumba.
Okay.
But it was a T.
Okay. And so when was she on the air there? Because my Houston stuff goes back to the 60s, and I have a feeling Tumba probably wasn't there then. So,
No, it was probably, you know, in more recent times she was murdered by her boyfriend.
Well, there, that happens.
And I thought maybe you knew of her, you know, since you're like in the same industry, and she was supposed to be really popular.
Wow.
I mean, or I might be saying the name wrong.
All right. All right, I'm looking this up. This is not new. It's a couple of years, not old either, but we're talking about Kumba, K-U-M-B-A, Sase. Marie was the name she was going by. And apparently there was an arrest. Leroy Suits, 43 years old, was arrested for her murder. And don't know what the conviction was, but yeah. All right, so... apparently, I'm looking here, she was well known in the community, but she was hosting a digital radio show, so one like AM or FM. So no,
okay.
I don't know. But unfortunately, far too many stories like that. You don't have to be in radio for that. But, you know, that's why you always say the quality of your life is measured by the quality of your associates. It's really important to know who you're hanging around with.
Yeah, well, the person that they interviewed that was supposedly friends with her had said that she always kind of liked a bad boy.
Right, right.
But she didn't know what she was getting into with this bad boy. She thought he was just like did some time for some petty armed robbery or something.
Yeah, she's a pretty girl. I'm looking at her picture right now, but apparently he's life in prison, so he was convicted. So... She had been an aspiring model as well, and she was hosting an internet radio show. So I don't think she was, like I say, not AM or FM, not broadcast, but apparently still well known, and obviously by all the accolades and the thing at the time of her shocking death, and it's always a shock, single gunshot to the head.
And when was it again?
2016.
Okay.
So we're talking 5 years. And it's interesting that it was fingerprinting, because to get your driver's license in Texas, you have to do the fingerprints. And Houston police ran the fingerprint they found on her and discovered, in fact, that they had a suspect. That's also the way I think they discovered who she was, because they found her in a ditch.
So, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd have to read more about it.
I didn't remember that part.
Yeah, I'd have to read more about it to find out exactly what the deal was, what Leroy Stutz was so upset about. Obviously upset about her popularity and all that, but there's usually more to it. So
yeah, because I think he didn't tell her that he might have been in jail for attempted murder or something really bad.
No, that
before.
Was murder. Yes, for a murder he committed in 1992. Well,
you've
ended the half hour, so we'll talk more about this. Interesting story. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Yeah, he got out on parole in 2011. All right, so we'll find out what's going on in the world at large, and then we'll reconvene right here on WGN Radio. We'll be right back. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's Rocky Burnett, Johnny Burnett's son, Johnny Jr., who turned 70 last week, hard to believe. And in 1979, he did very well with Tired of Toeing the Line. And it looked like he's off to a roaring start for a great career, and ultimately really never had another hit, as a singer. As a songwriter, not necessarily the same deal. He wrote for a number of people, including had a European hit for Percy Sledge, and of course, born in Memphis, where Johnny was living, in June of 1953. So there you go. Happy birthday to Rocky. All right, 888-876-5593. We'll get to Bruce. We'll get to James. We'll get to you. But I was reading more about the situation of this gal in Houston, and she was actually an immigrant from Sierra Leone, and just messing with the wrong guy. I don't think she knew that he had been paroled a few years earlier on a murder charge where he was convicted. And apparently, as her star began to rise in the Houston community, she was looking for a co-host for her podcast, and she picked a friend, a female friend, and he was just incensed. He thought it should have been him. And one thing led to another, and whether that was the full cause or not, who knows. But he murdered her and ultimately dumped her body. And it was not all that difficult to follow the bloody trail, and it was bloody. So he was convicted in 2017, and I think his first bid for parole will be 2046. And he's in Anderson County, which if you're going from Dallas to Houston, it's off to the side there. No, it's pretty much in the middle of nowhere, but not too far from that, from I-45. All right, so... yeah, tough. But it does, I'm telling you. The quality of your life is determined by the quality of your associates, for better or worse. Yeah, who you choose to surround yourself with. And in her case, sadly, it was truly the wrong guy. So, we got Bruce in Elwood. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Bruce.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you doing tonight?
All right, how about yourself?
Remember last night we were just talking about the capability of the Navy listening in the North Atlantic?
Well, and I thought about you when I heard that they heard the explosion on Sunday.
I like when we talked last night, I was almost sure they did. I just didn't think that information was going to get out this quick because it's kind of, I mean, that's a secret listening system. I think the capabilities out.
Well, the details are secret, but they, you know, these reports, as you know, were not chock full of details, very much broad stroke. So
yeah.
I don't think they were giving away many state secrets because the fact that they can is sort of well known. Exactly how and what's involved and what all they can do, we're not hearing that on the reports. We're just hearing that they heard something that could be the explosion Sunday and they reported it to someone or other. And that's all we know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of thought they were doing the search as a cover up because that's what they've done in other submarine disasters. You know, they put the search out there to cover the capability of their systems, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't know how much information they provided. See, that's the other thing. They're saying that they heard the noise, quote unquote, but that doesn't mean they gave anybody geo coordinates.
Oh, I'm sure they did. They said they gave it to the. They said they gave it to the Coast Guard.
Well, if they gave the Coast Guard,
I read an article in the Daily Mail.
If they gave the Coast Guard the geo coordinates, then the question is, why wasn't the Coast Guard Johnny on the spot for that point? Or
they were.
I was going to say, after the explosion, you're talking. You know, when you're talking about an implosion, obviously the debris is not confined to 3 square inches. So, and it's not like there was a recovery of bodies here either. We're talking about a recovery of debris.
Well, I think they were waiting. That ROV that found it was the one that flew in from the U.S., and I think they're waiting for one with that capability to get there, maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah. They said it was the guy I saw on was a retired Navy submarine captain, and he said that was the one they were waiting for that had the capability to go down that deep and find it.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised. Just just a very sad ending all the way around.
For
the people involved, obviously, they didn't know a thing. An implosion is not the kind of thing you get warning. It's not like you're, you know, on the plane that's going down.
No.
It's instantaneous. But I assume it's, you know, obviously it's catastrophic failure. I don't have to assume I know that. But obviously it is that. But of what? Probably the pressure system.
Well, that thing was, it was carbon fiber 5 inches thick.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Every time it would, I mean, it's like an airplane. Every time an airplane goes up and down, it adds stress to the frame. And the same thing with this. Every time it goes down and comes back up, it's going to have developed little cracks or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know how well they were testing. We're talking about doing a non-structural destruction testing on those things every time, you know, because it could have developed a crack on the way up the last time.
That's absolutely true. It could have. And that actually was the problem years and years ago when Boeing first put out those 727s in the early 60s. It would develop hairline fractures in the tail. And they lost a few planes before they realized what was going on. So obviously, yeah, it's built to withstand intense pressure. But when you're talking about any defect in the integrity, that absolutely could be an explosion.
Yeah.
So I guess they found 5 different major pieces, the nose cone and a large debris field and the front end bell of the pressure hull. So
yeah,
that's what made them say this is a catastrophic event. But of course it's a catastrophic event. They found a second smaller debris field where they found the other end of the pressure hull. So that's, that's basically it. And there was one expert who said the only chance of survival would have been if the Titan had dumped its ballast and risen back to the surface. But, in an implosion, I don't think you get that option.
No. They said it happened in microseconds.
Yes.
You know, microseconds. They would
have never known what hit them, which it's interesting because, as obviously with these 5 individuals now, the press is going crazy doing all the, life stories and all the color, if you will.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that Shahzada Daywood had previously survived a plane that almost crashed with his wife, and they both were only 3 years ago. And so, you know, you hear things like this, and it was horrendous, apparently, scared the living daylights out of them. And, his wife talked about it, saying this was really life-changing for us. But, life changes on a dime every time. And I think we all know people who still hold the ticket for a plane that crashed or other things or a route they normally would travel. It's just that day they didn't, and vice versa. You really wonder about that fickle finger of fate. And are there accidents, or is this just part of the universal plan?
Who knows?
That's
who
right.
Knows,
but no one here does.
Like I said, I was just surprised the information came out so quick.
Yeah, interestingly. But again, I thought about you when I heard that, and I thought, well, there's Bruce. But again, it wasn't so specific where they were giving up everything.
No. It was good 50 years ago when they found the Thresher and the Scorpion. But what it might be now, and with satellites and everything else that can listen. They can find it. They can look from the satellites and see magnetic anomalies in the ocean.
Right. So
it's just.
The bottom line was, maybe they didn't know it, but rescue was never an option of this from minute one. There was only one outcome that was possible. Sadly, well, there you go.
Well, I'll let you go, and I got more people calling.
Thanks
so.
For calling. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
So 888-876-5593. We'll get to James in Oregon. Giant snails in Florida. Well, yeah, there's a lot of creepy crawlies in Florida. I think it's the humidity. We'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Hey!
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I'm Donnie Elbert. Just entertaining myself here. Got to get myself together. 1970 on Rare Bullet Records. Yeah, name something else on that label. Of course he wrote it. And the flip side, too. Actually, that was a B-side. And the A-side was Can't Get Over Losing You. All right, so 888-876-5593. And Johnny D in Ohio, welcome back to WGN.
Yes, hello, Raleigh. I don't know what's going on my phone. I could already hear you. Let me, wait a minute. Let me see if I got it. Hello?
Yeah, hello, operator.
Wait a minute.
Testing Johnny D's phone. I don't know. Do you
I'm messing with the in-call volume.
I see. Telephone 101. All right. Well.
Is it the phone is very quiet. All right, but I'll try to talk anyhow.
Yes, do that.
Yeah, I wanted to, because I don't know if I could hear you if you're speaking.
Yes, I hear
normally
you.
I speak over you because of the, what do you call it?
Oh, I see, because it's not full duplex, because it's half duplex.
Well, whatever duplex it is, that ain't got nothing to do with it, just with the volume.
Yeah, no, I understand. All right.
All right, anyhow, listen. Excuse me. You know, I'm still getting over that little bit of a cold.
Yeah, the creeping crud, I hear that.
So let me say this. I wanted to thank you for playing the David Allan Coe song, The Ride.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Because I was thinking to myself, well, if she plays it, I'll call. Right?
Yes.
If she forgets, I won't.
Okay? Yes.
But you remembered.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know if you know me, Raleigh. When I hear a song that I really like, and I really like that song.
I can tell, yes.
That all in my head, all day long, I've been singing it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So then... You know, you might know how I like to play around with lyrics and this and that, you know, make up song. So I thought to myself, I'm going to make this song. It's called, what the heck was I going to call it? Big Star Raleigh James.
Oh, God.
Big Star Raleigh James, I'm going to call it, all right?
Yeah.
And it goes like this. I'm going to sing a verse that I have. I have the whole thing, I think, in my head, but I didn't write it down.
Mm.
But it goes... Well, I was thumbing out of Youngstown, Ohio, had my guitar on my back, when a strange lady stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. She was dressed like 1950, bleach blonde and hollow eyed. She said, it's a long, long walk to Nashville. Would you like a ride, son? That's the first verse.
All right. Well, there you are. Creative as right always.
Then, when the strange lady pulled by my side, she was dressed like 1950.
Yeah.
Bleach blonde and hollow eyed.
All right. Well, there you are.
I can't hear you, Raleigh, so I'm going to have to hang up.
Okay, bye.
I'll listen to the replay.
All right, get the manual. Thanks. Yes, when all else fails, read the manual. All right. Although, I'll tell you, I refuse to engage personally in modern technology such as that of, say, a cell phone. John, on the other hand, insists he has one. Well, of course, when there's problems, guess who he calls? And so it was that a while ago he had really screwed up the home button. So this was an iPhone SE, second generation. Anyway. So I said, here, let me just give you a virtual home button. And I did very quickly in settings through accessibility. It doesn't take Einstein for that. What I didn't realize was that I was setting him on the road to hell because let's get that button fixed. And so we did. But whoever did the aftermarket work didn't get a genuine Apple part. You know, well, apparently Apple has a way to determine that. And you turn off the virtual home button because it's in the way of everything else you want, usually. It turns itself back on. And so for 2 days, I've been reading the instructions about how to keep it permanently turned off. I've done everything. And the bottom line is, you know, I'm about to just, you know, change the optics so we won't see it, because I'm pretty sure I can't make it go away forever. It will come back. So 888-876-5593. We'll get to James in Oregon. Don't go away, James. I want to hear about those giant snails. And, oh, Lisa in Dundee has some gossip. Well, that reminds me, I did get a couple tabloids today. I'll try to review them during the news that matters. And then I think there's, of course, a Harry and Meghan story. That's required reading, I do believe. But a Taylor Swift story, too, about why she dumped Joe, although some say Joe dumped her. I don't know. We'll find out about that and more, because we have 2 more hours of this. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine right here on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Oh, those are the Dells. My all-time favorite Dells record. I never even heard it before the 70s because it was unreleased. And that was recorded at probably a real low point for the Dells. This was May of 1956, and Chuck Barksdale left the night of the session to go join the Charms. And so turned out that Vivian Bracken's brother, Calvin Carter, was the stand-in to do bass. And they did 4 songs, and Now I Pray was one of them, and JoJo and Baby Do, and of course, what would become a huge hit, Oh What a Night. Not at the time, though. And in fact, the Dells were actually talking about breaking up until they ran into the Moonglows, who said, Hey, I got to tell you, Oh What a Night's a really big hit in New York. I said, really? And the reviews started coming in and did very well. And by late summer, by the way, in 56, Chuck returned to the Dells in time for a session which did not produce hits, but of course later did. So why did I think of the Dells other than I love Now I Pray? Got to be certainly my top 3 all-time favorite Dell records. But Vern Allison of the Dells turns 87 today. Happy birthday, Vern. Born in 1936 in Chicago. He was second tenor twice, 1952 to 58, and then again 1960 to 2012. And, of course, sadly, can't say too much in the way of happy birthday to the remaining Dells because they're no longer with us. Chuck Barksdale, of course, we lost in May of 2019. And Marvin Jr., it's been quite a while, May of 2013. Johnny Funchess, that was really, she was only about 62 years old. He had pneumonia. I think that was 98. And as far as, let's see, Johnny Carter, he was from Chicago as well and died in Harvey in, I think, about 2009. And I think it was lung cancer. And I'm not sure about Michael McGill. Maybe he's still with us, or Lucius McGill as far as that goes. So that's possible. But as far as everyone else, rest in peace. But Vern Allison's with us, and he's 87 today. So good going, Vern. All right, James in Oregon, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, good evening.
What's happening?
Yeah, I was just going to say something about the cell phones, Johnny B. I had a problem a couple months ago at my phone. I couldn't hear anybody on it. It was sound like in the mud. And I thought it was in the maybe in the network and stuff. And my wife called the help desk, and they did a couple of resets on it. I guess remotely they could do it. And I've not had any problems with it since then. So
excellent.
It could be something like that, you know.
You betcha.
Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned, the technology is half duplex, and that's true for VoIP phones as well. And for people who don't understand how that works, in the good old days with landlines from good old Bell, it was full duplex, meaning you could talk and I could talk both at the same time and we could hear each other. Well, now, for a lot of reasons, technically, especially saving bandwidth, when I'm talking, you can't, and vice versa. When you're talking, I can't. And so a lot of times you'll listen, especially on talk radio and stuff, and it sounds like a train wreck. They're both talking over each other, but that's because neither are hearing the other person.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just thought I'd throw that out there because I remember, was it Tom down in Covington or something like that was having problems?
Oh, poor Tom. Yeah, he called last night wanting to play Monday Night Trivia. John had to inform him it was Wednesday.
Oh. Oh, well. Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully he'll remember next Monday night and realize it is Monday night because we'll be playing trivia again.
Yeah, there you go. But sometime between last night and this morning, I was hearing about these giant snails in Florida, and I guess in Broward County, they've quarantined them down there where you can't take plants in or out of there checking for snails. So I don't know how big these snails are, but they're giant, are they?
Yeah, there's pictures. There's and yes, they're not native to Florida, but I'd say they're man, I'll tell you, if you have a big hand, you might be able to fit one in your hand, but it's probably going to overlap on both sides. It's
really
it's pretty sizable thing, don't you know? And actually, that could be devastating. You know, it's bad enough to have snails, but to have snails the size of your head, I'm not sure that's great news.
Eduardo's got more to worry about than palmetto bugs, huh?
Oh, yeah, well, the palmetto bugs are native to them, so even though we might not like them, and, you know, as a kid, we used to paint nail polish on their back and have races, so that, you know...
used to play around with them.
Absolutely.
I was a kid down there. Yeah.
So the snails were in Miramar. As well, they should be.
Yeah.
So they've quarantined the area from Pembroke Road and South University Drive, and so therefore it's illegal to remove the giant African land snail. And meanwhile, I guess they'll get a handle on it. I don't know. The worst part is we're heading for mosquito season. Okay, they're not really big, but man, oh man, they can be a problem.
Yeah, mosquitoes. Palmetto bugs and snails.
Yes. Well, I think mosquitoes are kind of snail bait.
Oh, are they?
Oh, yeah. That's why I mentioned them together. I worry more about the mosquitoes.
Yeah. What about the boa constrictors down there and stuff like that? There's open season on those.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of that, but that's usually you know, some kid who loses a snake, and you know.
Yeah.
And obviously you don't want to see that slithering out from the porch twice your size or anything like that, but it's not nearly an ecological disaster like the snails. This could be extensive damage, and not only to you know, what we see for flora and fauna, but Florida agriculture in general can be threatened by this. I think in the past it took like a decade and $1 million to eradicate them way back when. So they do like a campaign every decade or so, and you know, they throw millions of dollars at it, but they come back.
Just throw some salt down there. Won't salt kill snails?
You know, I don't know. I know that they are these particular snails are able to consume 500 different kind of plants, and not organic material. Yeah. They I don't know, it's a bad thing because they particularly like stucco, and you know, so put them in the hood. But unfortunately, much like mosquitoes and all that, they carry things, and in this case, they carry lungworm, which is a parasite which can cause meningitis in human beings. So, they grow to about 8 inches long.
Yeah.
And they're
pretty good size snail.
Yeah, so they're egg laying. They can lay up to 1,200 eggs a year.
Yeah.
And of course, it's illegal to own them or bring them in, but that doesn't stop somebody, and it doesn't take too many of them to in fact become a problem. So, giant African land snail.
Yeah.
So okay. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to know what you heard about those and stuff. And
well, they're damaging to agriculture, and they're hard to eradicate. Yeah. For the most part, most people won't come down with meningitis, thank God. So for the most part, they're fairly harmless to individuals. But as far as the economy in Florida, which is has a huge agricultural component, it's a problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I know down in the Everglades, they were trying to regenerate that back to the old days where they were filling it up with land, dirt, and stuff like that, and trying to build homes in there.
There's a lot of that. Of course, if you go back far enough, before they were filling anything in, there were unscrupulous developers, selling waterfront property, which of course was submerged property. Yeah. But then, as they dredged, it goes further and further west. I mean, you Broward County, where the snails are, that didn't used to go any further west than the Sunshine State Parkway, what they now call Florida's Turnpike. Yeah. But now, my God, that's the middle of town. So they're eating up the Everglades right and left.
Yeah, I remember as a kid in the 50s up around St. Pete, they were filling in parts of the bay and out in the Gulf and stuff.
Yeah, that was huge. That was sort of the epicenter. That and slightly south in the Sarasota Bradenton area, there was a lot of that. And you look at a lot of that land. It's not nice to follow Mother Nature, but indeed they did.
And then I was wondering if that's what caused some of that red tide, because they say it disrupts the flow, the natural flow of what used to be there, you know?
Oh, absolutely. That's a factor. You know, I can't pinpoint specifics, never studied it, but to think that it isn't a factor, you'd have to be plumb stupid, because of course it is. Yeah. And, that was always the argument of, expansion versus the environment. And usually the environment would lose.
Yep.
So,
I'm going to get off here. Nice talking with you tonight.
Likewise. Good to hear from you. Thank you for waiting.
Jump in there.
All right. Good deal. Thanks. Appreciate it. So 888-876-5593, 888-88-RALEIGH. Ooh, we're going to get to Lisa next. We're going to gossip. I don't even know what about, and already I'm excited. So we'll pick it up there on WGN Radio.
Grandma Annie and old Papa Danny almost made it to the Hall of Fame, but they couldn't win an Oscar, Emmy, or a Grammy. They got caught smoking cigarettes with no name. He said, she said, we said, they said, we know what's going on behind closed doors. She heard, we heard, they heard. Now let me tell you some more. I know Susan and Robbie. I seen her brother Bobby running to the hotel he was wearing. The last time I seen him, him and Jam and Fanny was snorting funny powder with a straw up their nose.
Oh, well,
he said, she said, we said, they said, we know what's going on behind closed doors. Tell you some more. Their power and all in the endeavor just to have a love affair with Donald Lane. When he seen he couldn't take it, he knew he had to make it to the doctor for some morphine to ease the pain. He said, she said, we said, they said, we know what's going on behind closed doors.
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. Those are the Keystoners. Yeah, they were a Philadelphian, and that came out late in their career. In fact, right before Norman Smith, who wrote it, died. Gossip, 1992 on Starbound. That was Val Shively's label, and he produced it. And so since we're going to talk about Gossip, I felt, well, we got to play Gossip. All right, so Lisa in Dundee, let's have it all.
Well, I'm just in the mood for some gossip, but I need it from you. I don't have any gossip. I want you to give some gossip to me. I'm just wondering how much you know about Buck Owens and his wife, Lisa Todd.
I don't know much about their marriage, that's for sure, because, of course, they were Bakersfield, and I only knew Buck because, in Nashville he did Hee Haw, so he'd come in to do that.
Right.
And, of course, he owned radio stations. And I can tell you that Buck Owens ran truly the Cadillac of radio stations. He was the best owner ever. And he had a station in Phoenix, KNIX, which was just palatial, and everything about it was first rate and top notch. And Buck always said, I will never sell this. Well, eventually he did, and when talked about it, he said, well, I never thought some idiot would offer me that kind of money. And, and so, of course, it was Clear Channel / iHeart who did. But they still have the Bakersfield compound, and he was involved with a lot of people in Bakersfield, which was sort of Nashville West, even before Nashville really got up.
And I don't think either one of them's alive right now.
Well, Buck's not.
I think she... See, the reason I ask is because the two of them were on Tattletales.
Oh, yeah?
You know, that game show?
Uh-huh.
And she was one of these... You know, she had super big hair and just was really throaty when she talked and, very sexy and...
Well,
and it was just fun to see the two of them. But I think she had a bit of a troubled life.
Well, here, you got to understand he was married four times.
Oh, boy.
So the first one, I think there was one annulment and the others were divorces. But Bonnie Campbell was the first wife. And actually, one of their sons, Buddy Allen, had sort of a country career. But then he later managed one of the stations and he was a good guy. Then mid-50s, he married Phyllis Buford. And they had a son. But then while he was doing Hee Haw, while, I would run into him fairly regularly, he was sort of in a relationship, shall we say, with Honey, Hee Haw Honey Lisa Todd. And right. Well, that didn't last very long. In 1977, he married a fiddle player for the Buckaroos, Jana. And
did he marry Lisa Todd, though?
I think so.
Or were they just a couple?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't know that they ever did get married. I absolutely, I never saw the certificate. I don't know. But I don't know. But the relationship became, if not codified by marriage, at least well known that that was his lady, Lisa.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, they've been on, like I said, they were on the game show.
Yeah, and she...
And it was just fun to watch them because she was making eyes at all the guys and
yeah. Well, no, she was absolutely a Hee Haw Honey, and
sure.
So that was the deal there. But like I say, then he married Jana, and that was really weird because he filed for annulment like within weeks of getting married. Then they got back together and they got back to all that stuff. And so anyway, then 2 years later he married Jennifer. And so I know it was like that. But while he was kind of involved with Lisa Todd, his son was appearing with him on Hee Haw from time to time. I mean, it was a soap opera as far as that goes. And, Michael Owens was his other son. That was from the first marriage, and then there was the love of his life, Bonnie Owens. But anyway, that was... I think Lisa was a short-term, gal pal, if you will.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, she might not know.
Are we ever going to know why you have such distaste for Bill Anderson?
Oh, I've told the story. You want to hear it again? Hang on. Don't go away. I'm happy to tell that story. That's not gossip. That's fact. Hold on a minute.
Good.
We'll pick it up there on WGN Radio.
Still, though you broke my heart, still, though we're far apart,
After all this time,
still,
you're still on my mind.
I love you still.
Ooh. Baby, I've read your letter 5 times, and I'm writing back to tell you that you're all wrong about me. The other day in school, you passed me in the hall. The reason I didn't come up to you and say hello was because I was too embarrassed to let you see me crying. Please take me back. And if you do, baby, I'll never be jealous anymore.
I love you still.
After all this time,
still.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I couldn't resist it. Of course, a big Bill Anderson written hit, Still. Not Too Big by the Sun Rays. They were a California group that Murray Wilson, the father and producer of the Beach Boys, found them and produced their stuff. And first he tried with I Live for the Sun, and that didn't do anything. And then Andrea, and that didn't do anything. And then Still, and that didn't do anything. They were all on Tower, which is a subsidiary of Capitol, which the Beach Boys recorded on. And nothing did anything, so that was the end of the Sun Rays. But so Lisa never heard the Bill Anderson story. All right, and it's actually now in 2 parts. It gets better. All right.
Oh, good.
So, 1974 was an interesting year in Nashville because, you know, Nashville had always said that it wanted to be mainstream, but it didn't really. And this was always an infighting thing that had gone on since well before I was there, you know, when they wouldn't have, like, electrified instruments on the Grand Ole Opry and all this kind of stuff. Well, anyway, they were always saying they wanted to be mainstream. Well, as quote-unquote country-politan started in the latter 60s, they were starting to get a smattering of airplay, but nothing really, and they were always talking about how they wanted to be mainstream. Now, by the way, the reason you want to be mainstream is this. If you have a number one top 40 album, it might sell 1 million copies. If you have a number one country album, it may sell 20,000. So, obviously, you want to be mainstream, but at the same time, you don't. Okay, so here comes 1974, and here comes the CMA Awards, and Charlie Rich wins them, along with who's the female vocalist of the year? Olivia Newton-John. Well, hell, you'd have thought someone slayed their favorite uncle. These people were just aghast about this. And so it was that Bill Anderson and Barbara Mandrell and a couple of artists formed a group, the ACE, the Academy of Country Entertainers. Okay. And they want, you know, in fact, Barbara used to say, well, I like Olivia Newton-John, but she's not country. And I thought after Barbara years later was in Las Vegas with all her glitzy shows, I thought, well, I like Barbara Mandrell, but she's not country. Anyway, you know, they absolutely wanted to have both ways, but all right, fine. So I, of course, at the time was managing Charlie Rich, not his business manager. We're talking about promotion manager. I always have to say that because I had nothing to do with the business end of it at all. I promoted records. All right. So I used to put out a little weekly newsletter to the, you know, program directors and music directors, let them know what Charlie was doing on the charts. And oh, that was something, too. One time I told the truth about album sales and Epic came unglued. You can't tell them the truth. Yeah, it's just, okay, great. So anyway, they really will not give you the figures if you're going to tell anybody. All right. So I was very naive in all of this. But anyway, so I had written a little thing about the Academy of Country Entertainers. Nothing major, but okay, fine. So next thing you know, I pick up a Billboard magazine, and I read the article, and within 10 minutes, Charlie's business manager is saying, I think we got a problem. All right, what Bill Anderson did was he went to Billboard and talked about how other artists were putting them down because they wanted to keep country pure. And he used as an example my newsletter, which apparently he never read, by the way, because I didn't say anything bad. And so he goes on, basically makes me out to be Beelzebub. And the guy, worst thing he ever did, in fact, after that, I think I could have owned Billboard, and this was a decade before I was working for him. But in any event, the guy prints it as if, and Charlie Rich's manager said this, this, and this, you know. Well, so Charlie's really pissed because, of course, he doesn't want to be seen that way. And he's in Memphis anyway, not Nashville. Well, I sent the actual newsletter to Charlie, and he loved it. He said, I don't have a problem with any of this. This is great. And his business manager said, well, you know, I have a problem with it either. I said, well, So I called the guy at Billboard, obviously. I said, I think we have a... He said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm, you know, whatever you want. After that, he would write about Charlie Rich if Charlie sneezed. You know, I mean, it was good. But I had a mutual friend who worked at Tree. Tree was the publishing house that Bill Anderson wrote for. And Bill, you know, he got wind that I wasn't very happy with him, to say the least. And so he never would talk to me about this. All right, just wouldn't. Oh, it doesn't matter and all this. Well, I ran into him one night at WSM. We were both there on the Harold Hensley show, the overnight guy who did the trucking show. And Bill said, well, let's just wrap a big bow around this and forget about it. Whatever it was, doesn't matter. It's all water under the bridge. There's no problem, honey, is there? And I said, well, I think you probably want to discuss it with, oh, no, there's nothing to discuss. Everything's just great. And I thought, well, you lousy SOB. All right. So needless to say, he forever was on my list because I thought that was really rotten because he could have caused me a lot more anxiety than he did. But as for a while there, I was answering the phone a lot, if you know what I mean.
So
When I was in Nashville on the air at I wasn't there, actually, but they were carrying my show at WLAC. I had this is over a decade ago now. It came up that I didn't like Bill Anderson. Now, what I did not know at the time, had no idea, because this is now, what, 40 years later? No idea at the time is that Bill had found himself in a little trouble with the law. Apparently, he had had some type of discrepancy with a girlfriend, and he was on a deferred sentence, and he had to be a good boy for a year or something. I don't know the particulars. I don't want to know the particulars, but I had no idea of any of this. But anyway, someone told Bill, hey, the nighttime woman on WLAC says you're pretty rotten. Well, he, of course, came unglued because he was afraid that it was referring to what was then a current action. And I didn't know that at the time. But anyway, I get an email from him. We really should talk. I'm so sorry about this. I don't know what it is and all that. Well, anyway, when I proceeded to tell him that this went back 40 years, I swear to God, he writes, well, why don't we just wrap a big bow around it and just forget it and call it quits? And I'm like, you. And so I thought, you know, this guy is slime from a new level of slime. And that's not a person. And so that's why I have no respect for him whatsoever.
And everybody seems to really like him. I mean, I know.
Oh, yeah, whispering Bill Anderson.
Believe it or not, he's been on Tattletales, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
He's Becky.
Yeah, no, he's quintessential Nashville. That's the veneer. And, I mean, after all, that's whispering Bill Anderson.
I was just going to say that, too, yeah.
How can you not like whispering Bill Anderson? I'll defecate on him is what I'll do. So anyway, I've always run my life as a real person. And so when somebody chooses not to do that, and especially somebody who has caused another person quite a bit of grief, and again, it didn't cost me a job and all that, but, you know,
but still, he could have cleared it up quite easily.
Well, and that's right. And Billboard did clear it up, but he never gave them any quotes whatsoever or said, I'm sorry, or retracted it. No way. Course, the ace, the Academy of Country Entertainers, died a merciful death. You know,
Now, they weren't upset with Charlie Rich winning, right?
Well, remember, Charlie Rich was not a country performer originally. Charlie Rich was Sun. He was R&B. He was, and you know, one of his biggest hits was Mohair Sam. And granted, it was written by Dallas Frazier. I recognize that. But my favorite Charlie Rich record, though. But he was absolutely not considered quote unquote country. Now, when he was on RCA, they did release some country stuff, but it didn't hit. And then, you know, I think Mercury for a while released some country stuff after Mohair Sam, but it didn't hit. So when Charlie was the male vocalist and the Australian girl was the female, was the female vocalist, they came unglued, and they used Charlie basically as the poster boy of how they're not country.
But don't they vote for each other?
Well, it's... Getting into the politics of that's a little different, but yes and no. But anyway, that's where they were going with
but
that.
But he probably had his two big hits that year, right, in 74?
Well, right. Well, actually, 73 was Behind Closed Doors, which was the one that started right. it off. And Kenny O'Dell wrote that. And, you know, Kenny had written Beautiful People and other things. So he was not necessarily what you'd call a country writer. But then the other two, Very Special Love Song and Most Beautiful Girl, they were mm-hmm. definitely country records. But they crossed yeah. over and were big pop hits.
Yeah.
But no, they were not happy about Charlie winning that, and that was one of their causes. You know, we can't have like yeah. these people infiltrating country.
Do you remember who was nominated along with them? That
you know, I could look it up because I'm sure I still have the
curious.
Playbills.
I can look it up too.
Yeah, I had to. But. I used to have to go to those things. How I hated that. And yeah. I do remember that one though, because you know I was known for wearing nothing but black turtlenecks and jeans. You know I was not fitting in with the Nashville crowd too well. But I remember someone said you have to wear a dress, and so oh God, I didn't even have a dress at that point. So I went to the lingerie department and just bought you know not a nightgown but damn close to it. And everybody, your gown is beautiful. And I'm like, you know, you people are fools. Just
jeez,
fools.
And nowadays you can wear. You don't have to wear anything practically.
Well, practically right. But I mean, so yeah, I got all these compliments on what was, you know,
oh,
a night
funny.
Coat at best. So, yeah.
Well, and I have to say, I haven't heard that Rocky Burnett song in so long. And
yeah.
I'm sure I have his album somewhere because
yeah.
I thought he was terrific when that first came out.
I did too. I thought it was going to be a lot more stuff.
I did too.
Yeah.
But one hit wonder.
Yeah.
Okay, and the last thing I want to say is for Johnny D, I just want to thank him for the birthday wishes Monday.
Yes.
That was very sweet of him. And if he could only put me in one of his songs, then I could cross him off my bucket list.
Oh, all right. So Johnny D, that's Lisa from Dundee. Lisa from Dundee.
I know. I'm sure I won't be in this next one that, you know, because there's only room for two people in that truck.
You never know. Maybe it's a camper.
All right. Well, thanks, Raleigh. I'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Okay, hon. Bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593. Yeah, my friend at Tree, who was the mutual go-between with Bill Anderson, was a guy named Early Williams. Wee Willie Williams. And he was one of the Blue Caps, Gene Vincent's group. Sorry that he's no longer with us. Accidental gunshot wound around 99. Really sad. But Early was one of my closest friends, and he was as real as they come. And boy, he told me some inside stories that to this day persist as other versions, shall we say. Not Bill Anderson-esque, but other people as well. He had the goods on them all. So 888-876-5593. That's 8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio. Yeah. and radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Mayor Deodato, who turns 80 today. Happy birthday, and yes, still with us. And I glommed onto him early. He was, not even 20 when he was arranging a lot of the stuff that I was first hearing coming out of Rio and Niterói, and thought he was just tremendous. And of course, stateside, he had moved here in 68, so he was doing things long before, Space Odyssey 2001, that album, which was just huge for him. That we played was Havana Strut, which came out in 74, and it was also on MCA. It was on the Whirlwinds album, and it was nice. But he has worked with more and varied artists than you could ever imagine. Everybody from Antonio Carlos Jobim to Kool and the Gang, and in between. So a massive musical legacy, and truly terrific. Of course, his daughter, Kenya, and by the way, his publishing company was Kenya Music, but nonetheless, Kenya married Stephen Baldwin, so, she was living stateside, and he mostly has been, too, although he spends a lot of time in Rio as well. And his granddaughter, Haley Baldwin, is married to Justin Bieber. Yeah, so the infamy lives on. But I think few people stateside have any idea how huge he was as far as contributions to bossa nova. So 80 years old, he was a young upstart, compared to about same as Sergio Mendes, but certainly younger than the ranking crew, than the João Gilberto's or Antonio Carlos Jobim's or Carlos Lyra, or you name it. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And what is that going to do? It's going to take us to Matt in Beach Park. What's up, Matt?
All right, so 888.
All right, yes. Yes, there you are. Turn your radio off and talk to me.
Okay. Hi, Raleigh. How you doing?
All right, how about yourself, Matt?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
I listen to your show often.
Thank you.
And every time I listen to it, you always talk about something that it's either brings up a memory of the past or something, like talking about Snells, what it seems like you know a little bit about.
Hang on a minute. I just realized I'm blowing the news. So stay. Don't go away. Stay right where you are. WGN's already airing the news. Stay right where you are, and we'll pick it up after the news. Don't go anywhere. All right. And that's true for Stacy and Nick as well. Yes, I always say to Adam, make sure you cut me off when the news needs to come on or the commercials before it. And he wisely did. So I'm talking to anybody on the stream, and no one else, believe me. And so for those of you who are still listening to the stream, we'll pick it up right after the news. And a big thanks to Adam for saving our butts, because it's not good when we blow the commercials before the news.
Ambrose, it's very dark in here. Ambrose, where are you? Oh, Ambrose, hold my hand. Ambrose, something's vibrating. The walls are shaking. Ambrose, we can't go on like this. Why can't we sit in the park like other boys and girls? Why do we have to walk in the subway tunnel?
Just keep walking.
Ambrose, when you grow up, why don't you be a doctor? You don't want to be a doctor? You want to be a disc jockey? Oh, Ambrose, you can't spend the rest of your life avoiding responsibilities. Ambrose, how many times have you been in love? Can't you ever be serious?
Just keep walking.
Ambrose, if I gave you my picture, would you carry it in your wallet? Well, if I gave you a wallet, would you? I'll put some money in it. What do you mean, how much?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and of course, that's Ambrose Part 5, Linda Laurie, Linda Gertz. And John asked me to play it, actually, because one of the things for therapy post-hemorrhagic stroke is aquatics. And so what you do for an hour is walk back and forth, frontwards, backwards, and sideways in a pool. And he said today, he says, every time I'm doing it, all I can hear is just keep walking. And so he said, you got to play it. So there you have it. Linda Gertz voiced it. She wrote it. She played piano on it and had a hit with it when she was in high school, actually. And she, I think she was a senior. She wrote a number of other things, too, and some hits, actually. Some Cher stuff and all that, and Nancy Sinatra and all that. But the big hit she had was "Leave Me Alone, Ruby Red Dress" for Helen Reddy. But anyhow, she was around and performing and writing, and hip hop songs would sample her stuff. I kid you not. And Weird Al Yankovic would talk about sing about some of her stuff, and so it was interesting. Sadly, felled by cancer. Gosh, it's over a decade now. I think it was 2009, just 68 years old in Santa Barbara. So yes, Ambrose Part 5. Just keep walking. All right, so 888-876-5593. And Matt in Beach Park has a NASCAR poem. So yes, before the news so rudely interrupted me. And, yeah, and so Matt's back. All right, let's hear it. No, Matt, you didn't hang up, did you? I told him to wait. I guess he just didn't feel like it. All right. Well, Matt, I'm sorry. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. There he is. Matt, are you there?
Yeah.
All right. Good. Yeah. Good. I thought I lost you. There you are.
What I said was, I've been on hold longer. Have you ever tried to call a website designer?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Or any 800 number for, you know, whether it's your...
current.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, next, I'm a sports writer, Chicago sports teams, what I write about.
Uh-huh.
And I'm at rhymesandpoems.com, and I write children's books also.
Wow.
And illustrate them. But now this thing, now since I'm a Chicago sports fan, now we got a NASCAR coming to Chicago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I got a poem for you.
Oh,
I'm
good.
I'm happy to be with you. I'm starstruck.
Well, I can't wait to hear the poem.
Okay. Last time in second place, it's your turn to chase. You may have won in the past, but now I'm twice as fast. I have control of my speed and twice the speed. And first place is no fool. He's cool. He'll stop and wait and ask for a date. He puts his fans ahead of the pack. We're on the same track. And when I become a NASCAR idol, I won't just idle. I'll rev it up. I'll go full throttle. I'll marry a model. You can't stop a NASCAR racer. They have great skill and love a thrill. They learn it from their pop. No matter where they start, they finish on top. Go Chicago NASCAR.
All right. NASCAR got you that far. Now you need a guitar. All right.
Oh, you saw that on there. Okay.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, now when is the NASCAR race coming to downtown Chicago?
Well, I guess it'll be on the 2nd, July.
Oh, it's going to be interesting, don't you think?
Well, you know what? You know, everybody else gets to do something, so everybody should have their turn to do something, whatever they like to do.
I guess so. So, yeah, Chicago Street Race for 2023 NASCAR. Good deal. And your poem. Well, I'm so glad you shared it with us.
Well, you know, I had to do something. I couldn't just sit there and listen, and you guys talk about stuff, and I don't get to say nothing.
Well, you can always say anything you want. All you got to do is call and do it as often as you like.
Uh-oh, you're in trouble now.
Oh, I hope so.
Okay,
all right,
thank you.
Good deal. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. All right.
Bye.
So, Matt the Poet. All right, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and that takes us to, let's see, Stacy. Now, Stacy, was it a better day today? Stacy. We've lost Stacy. Hopefully it was such a good day, she's doing something she likes much better. But Nick is in Baltimore. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, good morning, Raleigh.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. I had a couple of questions. One's a beach music question.
Okay.
And the other one is a radio question that I know you would probably know the answer to.
I'll try.
I've been curious about.
Okay.
But the beach question, wasn't there an enclave in Pittsburgh?
Oh, okay. It wasn't beach music, but now we're talking Porky Chadwick. And the interesting thing about beach music, and it's really true about the East LA oldies as well, is they tend to have enclaves throughout the country. And a lot of the records that became beach hits were big Pittsburgh oldies, big Porky Chadwick oldies. And, you know, that's right. That's right. Dynamic Broadcasting, Leonard Walk, you betcha. Pittsburgh is such a unique town, and anybody who doubts it, it's the only place I know where the number one oldie of all time can be High on a Hill by Scott English. But but there were so many records that were flops everywhere else, you know, like Donna the Delighter's Native Girl, Elephant Walk, things like that, that were just so Pittsburgh. And a lot of the beach hits would be hits in Pittsburgh. Some of them would also be hits in Philly, not only Blavitt, but Ron Diamond, the Diamond Mine, he'd play some of them. And of course, there's a big crossover between beach music and the East LA stuff that Huggy Boy and Art LeBeau played.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, some of it also you get into Northern Soul, because a lot of that stuff wound up very big in England.
Okay, so that's how that...
Well, yeah, and like I say, Northern Soul broke my heart, because for years, the all-nighters started around 1971, and at Wiggins Casino was the first one, but there were other places like Blackpool, Mecca, and others. But in any event, the deal was they were, you know, all night they'd have these dances where they'd play these obscure American R&B records. And I said, man, this is for me, because, of course, I'm awake all night anyway. And so I'd been waxing sentimental for years about this, until one of the major disc jockeys in the Northern Soul scene explained to me why they were always getting shut down, because they were, by the way. And, it's like they want to run them out of town and the city fathers would shut them down. I said, well, what's wrong with the music? He said, it's not the music. Well, what do you mean it's not the music? And it turned out that what these were amphetamine dens. And so when you listen to Northern Soul, most of it has a similar frenetic beat, which is appreciated most, I guess, when you're using a few of Mother's Little Helpers. So that broke my little heart, because I was a purist, and it never even occurred to me this was going on. I thought everybody else wanted to be up all night listening to obscure oldies too. But apparently it wasn't quite like that. But yes, Northern Soul was, and still is to a degree, but most of the all-nighters have long been shut down. I don't think there are any left.
Wow. You know, I remember as a kid, I used to go back to Pittsburgh, Wham-O, I used to listen to Wham-O.
Right.
I used to listen to, you know, KQV and Wixie, and those were the three that I always hit.
Yeah.
And Wham-O was great. I mean, they were a daytimer.
Yep.
But
FM
was different, too. Their FM was, they did progressive rock at one point, and then they went back to, you know, an urban format.
Well, they had been everything, of course, you know, going back to the time when FM was worthless. They tried anything they could. But, Leonard from Dynamic Broadcasting, he also bought a daytimer in Miami, WOAH, Wonderful Woe. And he and a country entertainer, Happy Harold, this was about 1968, got involved. They were going for the CATV franchise for Hialeah, Florida. Well, of course, Womeco, which had WTVJ Channel 4 and the movie theaters, Lewis Wolfson, he went just crazy about this and took out all these ads saying that the pay TV monster was going to encroach upon your home. And bottom line is he got CATV defeated for Hialeah. But for a year there, Leonard was there every week. I'd see him at B. Morley's Mousetrap, a restaurant on Biscayne Boulevard.
Miami was, I've never been to Miami, always wanted to go, but...
It's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And that's true about every place. Places only exist in time. Like about, oh gosh, it's been almost 40 years ago now, a friend of mine said, oh man, I just love Bossa Nova. I really want to go to Rio. And I laughed and I said, no, you don't understand. You have to be able to go there in 1959 or 1960. If you go there now, you're not going to hear what you want to hear. Really? Well, of course not. You
know? It's like this place.
Well, yeah, Baltimore, absolutely.
It was a great town years ago.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
You
yes.
know, and, it was a great town that we had a lot of fun when we were kids, and really some really good schools, too. I went to one of them.
Yeah.
And it was quite a town. It really, what people make fun of it, you know, but it was a really great town. I mean, now it's not what it was, unfortunately. But.
Well, the neatest thing about it from a radio perspective was D.C. never had a top 40 station that covered the market. They had PGC, but it was a daytimer at 1580.
Daytime,
and so you wound up having the B-More stations be what's important because, yeah, they'd have Weem, which would be top 40 for a minute or there, or Wheel in Fairfax, or Winx even, and you know. But for the most part, it was Baltimore. So you had a number of Baltimore people's disc jockeys who were pretty much teen stars in D.C.,
Well, you had CIO got it covered. DC.
Yes, they did.
They don't now.
Yeah, yeah.
But Weem you couldn't get. Weem, I mean, I was in D.C. a couple of times when Weem, this is back in the early, 1969,
right.
70.
Right.
And I was in downtown, Washington, and it was spotty.
No, it absolutely was. That was one of the Mac Richmond stations, and you know he had the 1510 in Boston as well, mm-hmm. MEX, you know, and they were not good coverage stations. But, yeah, what D.C. always tried to do was ring it, Weem, Winx, and Wheel. But, you know, and then, you know, for hardcore people, Don Dillard on WDON in Wheaton.
Yeah,
that was big deal. So,
what did PGC FM, were they middle of the road or something?
Well,
what did they do with the FM? I mean, I know they went top 40 in the late 60s, but probably mid 60s, but.
Right, but before that, it wouldn't matter because, again, you didn't have the field effect transistor. The call letters on that FM, I think PGC was adopted in like 58. And that's when that came up. And it never mattered. It was in Morningside, obviously, and
right.
You know, as far as that goes. But they for you know the AM of course was just dead because of daylight. You know when you had to run down at sundown, but you know so. Oh man, I think the FCC had sold RNC to WPGC. I think it was $5 for the license and $10,000 for the equipment or whatever. And so that's how PGC FM came to be. It was RNC before that. And originally they were duplicating. Yeah, I know. $5 for the license. When I heard $10,000 for the equipment, I thought, "What equipment did they get that's worth $10,000?" But nonetheless, so they went on. But they were 100% simulcast initially, you know, they only broadcast till midnight for like 10 years. They would, you know, sign off, but I don't think they were stereo until the 70s, and so
yeah, it was in the early 70s, 70, 72, I think.
Yeah, right. So I know they got a general manager in there after they bought it, so this would be like 59, who was taking it like big band of the 40s because, you know, that at that time it had disappeared. It had only been about 10, 15 years that it disappeared. But the problem is that nobody, you know, who wanted to hear the big bands, you know, had a Macintosh tuner or whatever that had an FM, you know. So it didn't mean anything. But they got a PD from G.H. in Norfolk, the guy who later went to MCA, Dean Anthony became at MCA, but he was there. The new sound of WPGC, and yeah, that was Dean Anthony. I think
well, that clears that up.
Yeah,
but I had another question, and this has always been plaguing me about WPOC.
Uh huh.
1974. I was reading your media tracks.
Oh yeah.
Thing, and I remember it. 1974, I was a kid in high school when we were off of summer vacation. Mm-hmm. I used to dial scan. So I'm listening, I'm doing up and down dial scan. So I hit 93.1, which was WFMM.
Right.
And I heard the announcement that, you know, they're coming in at Nationwide Communications. Mm-hmm. And they didn't say what format it was going to be. I didn't hear them say it.
Yeah.
And I went away that weekend and came back, and it was country, and my heart sank because I thought for sure it was going to be GAR
no.
or something, you know.
I'm trying to think now. The PD is Aunt Peter, I think his name was, and I knew him at the time pretty well because I knew they were going to do it because he had come to Nashville.
And, Pete Porter.
Yes, Pete Porter. That's absolutely right. He came to Nashville, and we had talked at length about it beforehand. So I knew they were absolutely going to do that.
And
that
was actually, they were going to do country.
Yeah, I knew. But that was pretty exciting in 74 because now by 74 you've got FM leading the market in some markets, not in that many yet. But the idea that somebody like a Nationwide was going to buy an FM station in a major market, especially a major market not known for country and western, and take a country, and POC of course stood for Pride of the Chesapeake,
right?
Yeah. So,
but I felt for sure it was going to be, I guess they did the research that. I guess you got to look at the music trends, too, at that.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. I was mentioning before about the ACE, the Academy of Country Entertainers. You have Charlie Rich, you got Olivia Newton-John. You're starting to have this crossover. And Nashville had delusions of grandeur because it would be, another 5 years before Urban Cowboy and the stuff really took off. But okay. But you were starting to see that. And, because it was Baltimore, which normally wouldn't sell many country records, to say the least, it wasn't hard for Porter to come to Nashville and get big stars to do, liners and all that kind of stuff because, of course, everybody wanted
Well, but they were ingenious because, and the other thing was, Top 40 was already covered, I guess, from...
Oh, yeah. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are. Mm-hmm. And we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Was too blind to see you letting me go. Now that you've set me free, it's gonna take a miracle.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's the original, and that is just the best. And that's as Baltimore as it comes, because the Royalettes were from Baltimore. They'd been on Chancellor. They had a couple of flops, but then they entered a Buddy Dean talent contest, and they won it. And the prize was a recording contract with MGM. And the promoter put him in touch with Teddy Randazzo. And, just sublime. So many good, good things. And unfortunately, the closest they came to a hit was It's Gonna Take a Miracle, which Laura Nyro popularized on one of her albums. And then, of course, Denise Williams later cut and had a top 10 record. But doesn't get better than the Royalettes for me. Yeah. Now that's Baltimore all the way. All right. So back to Nick.
How did you know I wanted to hear that?
I didn't, but it is the best. And everything by them. I probably have 12 Royalettes records on KJ. I just love them.
Man, they were fantastic.
They were. And I think the rest of them, after a few more non-hits, like I Want to Meet Him, which was the follow-up and did nothing and on and on. And they appeared in 1965 at the NARA convention, the National Association of Radio Announcers. It was for the Black Jocks, and they had that in Houston. And they were the headline. And they just tore the house down. They were so good. And
wow.
Then, within short order, that was it. And I think most of the girls went back to work, got jobs, whatever. One of them became a Playboy bunny.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And then I don't know after that, surely. And then I don't know after that what happened to them. I guess they just had, hopefully, quiet but happy lives.
I think they broke up in 67.
Yeah, like I say, the closest it got to success was It's Gonna Take a Miracle.
That was a great tune. I loved them. It was
Me too. Me too. And that second album that with that pink cover and they're all in gowns, that has the best stuff on it. It really, Only When You're Lonely, and so many other great records. It's a big mistake, and I don't want to be the one, and you know, all that.
And so, unlike Dick Clark, you know, we want them to sign over all their rights and whatever.
Right. No, Buddy Dean was legit. He did not in any way make anything from the gals or any
of
their.
He's a really good guy.
He was. And boy, he got really victimized by the times because, of course, you know, he was about as far from a racist as anyone could get. You could tell that by what he liked to play. But he wanted to integrate it. And, of course, Baltimore being a working part of the South, you know, it's below the Mason-Dixon line.
Jim Crow.
Yes. And so he wanted to integrate it. And boy, people went just crazy. So then he decided, well, I guess the only thing we can do is just segregate it and have one day of the week will be just for, you know, just for the African-American teens. And, of course, that didn't satisfy anybody. And so ultimately they wind up canceling the show, and it was just a damn shame.
I remember his last show, too, where he walked off, you know, the curtain closed and that was it. It was pretty sad.
Oh.
I was 65, right?
Yeah.
So I was 8 years old, but I mean, I was...
Well, I thought it was 66, but okay, could have been 65.
66, so yeah. Well, yeah. I remember, but I remember seeing it, and because I was really sad, but...
That was, you know, and it might have actually been before it. It could have been on 64, I don't know. But it was right around then, like you say.
Yeah.
And part of the problem, of course, was those shows had all been pretty big until ABC, you know, took the Bob Horn show and made it Dick Clark and made it national. So that was a... And, of course, you know, being from Baltimore, you got to also see D.C. TV. So that was you had Milt Grant.
Yeah.
But
Dick Clark was never, well, they carried it briefly.
Yeah.
But I missed Buddy Dean, so I never got into Dick Clark. I'm sorry.
No, that was originally Bob Horn, and it was Bob Horn's Bandstand, and Bob Horn is the only guy I know who could have hosted a show that started out playing all pop standards in 1952 and segued through rock and roll in 1956 and didn't lose an audience. You know, I mean, that's not lost on me. But, you know, ABC didn't want him. He didn't look the part and all that kind of stuff. And he was easy to set up. You know, he liked old wine and young girls. So it was easy to set him up. And they did set him up. And the problem with Dick Clark is that he didn't know or like the music. You know, he was from an era before it. And he never, and of course, so was Bob Horn. But Bob Horn had been a musician and just liked it. Dick wouldn't have known it if he fell over it. But he looked the part, and so you know that's the way.
He was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was doing nights on FIL radio at the time when they got him, and he did right place, right time, right look. But, you know, that show was all about right look. I mean, after all, they wouldn't put Hank Ballard on, who wrote and recorded The Twist. They had to get Ernest Evans to become Chubby Checker because he looked right. He absolutely screwed up. But the only thing is, of course, thank God Hank Ballard wrote The Twist, so it won too bad.
The thing about going back to the FM... they were smart. POC was smart because they incorporated. Because I started listening to them, and it was pretty smart because they did that countrypolitan thing.
Absolutely.
And it was smart, but I had to ask you that because, and I contemporary was already covered by what three or four stations. So I guess that.
Well,
you know,
you were also at a time. You know, you're talking the mid-70s. Top 40 was not a really sterling time for Top 40 radio. You also were starting to have something brand new, and that's time buys bought on demographics. Because, you know, originally when it was Trendex and Hooper, and then Hooper and Pulse, when Trendex went away, and that was Hooper and Pulse were the big services. There weren't demographics. You know, if you were number one, that was everybody cradle to grave, pretty much. And Arbitron, which the diary method was approved in 1966 in a fit of insanity, as I like to say. But anyway, their big push, especially with Madison Avenue Time Buyers, was you can buy demographics. We can tell you who's listening. We can tell you if they're male or female and how old they were. Well, of course, this is going to be really bad for Top 40. to say the least. And so by the mid-70s, you had people looking at pop adult. You know, that's what they're calling the MOR stations then. And, you know, what would become adult contemporary? Because, of course, that was going to get you the 25 to 34-year-old female. And let's face it, that's where the money was. So, because Hooper went away in 1970, so it was just Pulse. And by, you know, by 74, Arbitron, or back then the American Research Bureau, was, you know, the big gun. So being top 40, not to mention that, that by 74, music was not really your friend. It was not a great time for contemporary music. The seeds of the problem were several years earlier because, you know, when album rock started to rear its head, that was about the same time that bubblegum music became a fad. You know, how often could you hear this crap? And it wasn't just the 1910 Fruit Gum Company and the Ohio Express. You know, you mentioned 73, 74. You're talking about Little Willie by, you know, Sweet. And so, you know, what you had to kind of be was you had to be maybe softer and blacker, like going deeper into the R&B catalog. You had to be harder and wider. It was almost regional, you know, station in the West where, you know, you might hear seven records by Buffalo Springfield, and the, you know, stations in Atlanta, you might hear seven records by the Marvelettes, you know, so it it was divided that way, but it wasn't a terrific time to have top 40 emerge.
So it was beginning to get fragmented.
Well, it was already fragmented. You had it, and you know, and then of course it sort of died completely when in the disco era it came back again. Right. Music leads it more than anything, because the early 80s, man, that was perfect for, they didn't want to call it, you know, top 40 anymore, can't call it that, we'll call it contemporary hit. But you know, you look at that, and you look at the Eurythmics and the Huey Lewis's and everybody else. I mean, it's just screaming top 40. So music leads that format because it's largely a current format.
Mm-hmm. And so, that's coincidentally 1980. That's when BSB came in, and that's then
right.
Later Hot Hits and.
Well, right, right, exactly, and it, you know, now
it followed the trend.
Sure, now you're seeing top 40 on FM all over the place, and that really started in the 70s. But you know, by the 80s, you almost had to be there; attendance was mandatory, so to speak. So, so yeah, there's a lot of things. But 74, I would think, if you really put yourself back at that point in time, you wouldn't be thinking in terms of top 40.
Right. But they incorporated some of that crossover stuff, which is pretty ingenious. So it did. They made the right business decision.
Yeah. No, they did well with POC. They really did. And Pete
they still
did
are.
Well. And then Bob Moody did well with it. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, I'll always love WYTH. What can I say?
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for clearing that up. I've always wondered, and I thought, you know, I'm thinking along the same lines as you illustrated, but I was curious because I mean you were in the business, so you would know, and I thank you for that.
Oh sure. And is Pete Porter still with us? I don't even know if he's still alive. I haven't heard his name in years.
I'm not sure. I know he was at one point he was a staff announcer at Channel 2 here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Always wondered what happened to him. Well, hopefully he's still with us and doing well.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
But hey, thanks a lot. And I'm sorry I took up so much of your time.
Always fun to talk. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye. So we'll pick it up right there. We got Greg in Iowa and Michael on the road. All right. Oh, I should have asked Michael. Let me see if I can quickly do this because maybe I can play it. Let me find out from Michael what he wants to hear, and that'll be the last bumper of the night. So, Michael, what do you want to hear?
Hello, Molly. I'm on my way to Green Bay, so you're riding right next to me.
Ooh, Green Bay. All right, go Packers. I like it already. Let's go to the museum. All right, so what do you want to hear?
I'd like to hear Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing.
You got it.
Please.
My pleasure. Come up next. Okay.
Yeah.
We will. Thanks, and thanks for taking me along for the ride. Love going to Green Bay. All right, so we will get Marvin and Tammy on next here on WGN Radio.
Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Marvin and Tammy, and this is really bad. I told Michael I'd play his request, and I hope he wanted Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, but I, after I said that and he hung up, I didn't remember which Marvin and Tammy it was, but I'm pretty sure it was Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing. More proof that I can't hold a thought hostage, and if I'm wrong, Michael will call me next Tuesday, and we will play whatever Marvin and Tammy you want to hear if it wasn't that. But that is a nice one. And, of course, that's Ashford and Simpson. They wrote it and produced it on Tamla in 1967. It was a hit in 68. So, yes, Tamla Records, Detroit, Michigan. Yes, that would be Trinity 13340. Okay, so let's talk to Greg in Iowa. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Raleigh. I've been listening to you since you came on, as you know, and you got a wonderful show. But I wanted to call and... I don't know if you'd figured out today or not, or anyone had ever said so. You had a conversation last night with Johnny from Austin, trying to figure out who that other Hank Williams was.
Oh, the third, yes, and then the fourth, the grandson, and then of course we also had another son. I think it was Sam who came out as gay because Johnny had mentioned that one of them did. Yeah, I did look that up, but I didn't talk about it. So let's talk about it. What do you know?
Yeah. Well, what I first heard this guy, he goes by Hank Three. It's
right.
Hank with the number three.
Right.
I don't know whether he's the grandson or a great-grandson, either one, but I first heard him on the satellite radio back in the early 2000s on the crossover country. I would describe his music as kind of that's rebel twang, you know.
Yeah.
During that period, there were quite a few artists that were coming out trying to revive the old twangy country sound.
And
I think that's where he surfaced. While I was waiting, I looked up on Google a video of him in 2010 doing a song called Howlin' at the Moon, and I think that'd give you a pretty good idea of who he is, and Johnny down there in Austin too.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I did look up Hank Williams III, and that'd be the grandson of Hank Williams. It was Hank Williams Jr.'s son, and his name actually was Shelton Williams, Shelton Hank Williams.
Yeah, I think that's the guy it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And he originally started as a punk rocker. And what was interesting about that is he fathered a son. He didn't even know it, but it turned out that the mother went to court, and sure enough, a family court judge proved it and ordered Williams to find more stable employment than music, so that Fincham could get the child support. And so he continued to play, but in other groups and stuff like that. And then later had signed with Curb. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he got that video I watched, that Howlin' at the Moon. They got a steel guitar and fiddle and this and that, but there's still some electric there, too. But it's pretty rowdy. Might be of interest anyway. Can I take a minute more and make one quick comment?
Absolutely.
I tuned in the night you told us about Scotty.
Yeah.
And, of course, I followed him all through the show, and I think it's just wonderful the way you brought him in and introduced him to all of us. And, I just want to comment now, that first night when it came on, I'm glad I was on from the beginning, but I want to really tell or say to your friend Dennis, he really moved me with that conversation that you had there, and I think he had quite a moving experience, too. I could feel it, right? I almost feel it now recalling the conversation, but... I hung up after that conversation, didn't listen to the rest of the show that night because it was almost sacred.
Well, thank you. And Dennis has been back. In fact, the landlord wanted to give him whatever of Dennis's possessions he wanted, since no family member had ever claimed any. And he asked me if I wanted anything. And I said, well, if he's got anything music related, of course I'd love it. But anyway, Dennis flew back up there, but the landlord at the time had a real family emergency, so he couldn't be there. But Dennis will go back. And again, I don't know if there's anything to retrieve, but if there are music mementos, I certainly want to keep that alive.
Well, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and you've ended the show tonight, so call me again.
Well, you know what? I just looked at the clock, and I did not call to say this. I wasn't even thinking of it earlier, but I just turned 76 years old.
Happy birthday! Well, have a wonderful birthday, and call me again next week.
I'll try to sometime.
Okay, I hope so.
I enjoy your show so much, though, so right, I'm always here listening.
Terrific.
Thank you so much.
All right, good deal, Greg. Thank you. All right,
bye
so
bye.
Big happy 76th to Greg. Yeah, hopefully it's a great day. And we thank Adam for keeping us on the air. We thank John for screening your calls. But, you know, above all, I thank you for calling because you make the show a pleasure to do. And physically tonight, it wasn't easy. So if you're going to listen for the replay, it may be tomorrow before I actually digitize that. I'm not sure because it hadn't been great. But you've made it great, and I appreciate it. Until Monday, that's a wrap. Tomorrow night is a replay of Monday Night Trivia. Then on Monday, we'll be live with Monday Night Trivia, and I'll talk to you then. Until then, I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.